Hey, good afternoon, folks. My name's Craig, and this is the Over the Fence show here on Raglan Community Radio 98.1 FM and Free FM 89.0, or you may be streaming live off raglanradio.com or streaming off the Free FM website, or listening back to a podcast or back to an archive episode, whatever way you're taking it. I hope you're having a lovely day out there today. It's a pretty good day for a late June day, to be honest. You know, warm enough and a little bit of rain here and there, but it was actually quite good, this rain, the last few days, because, it was a real threat. I was going to have to start watering the garden. But anyway, that's all by the by. Today on the show, we're going to have in the studio, no, not by phone, we're going to have Brent Kleiss, the Chief Executive of New Zealand Pork, coming in for a chat about the pork industry in New Zealand and all the goings-ons there. There's a bit happening around down the capital around it and things like that, so he's coming up pretty soon, actually, so, and then we'll probably do some weather and maybe some headlines and stuff like that after that. But for now, anyways, I'll get myself a little bit more organised. Here goes Donovan with Pistol to Dippy.
Look on yonder, misty mountain. See the young monk meditating, rhododendron forest. Over dusty hills, I ask you, what has been like being you? Through all levels, you've been changing, getting a little bit better, no doubt. The doctor bit was so far out, looking through crystal spectacles. I can see I had your fun. During our paperback reader, made the teacher suspicious about insanity. Fingers always touching, girl. Through our levels, you've been changing, getting a little bit better, no doubt. The doctor bit was so far out, looking through all kinds of windows. I could see I had your fun. Looking through all kinds of windows, I can see I had your fun. Looking through crystal spectacles, I can see I had your fun. Looking through crystal spectacles, I can see I had your fun. Rebel against society, such a tiny speculating whether to play a hip hop. Skip along quite merrily. Through our levels, you've been changing. Elevator in the brain hotel. Broken down, but just as well. Looking through crystal spectacles. Oh, I can see I had your fun.
All right, folks, it was Donovan there with a Pistol to Dippy, one of my old favourites there. And I'm going to quickly do some public service announcements, then we'll come to our guests after that. Just want to bring to your attention on this Saturday, the 1st of July, believe it or not, is from 9 to 1 at the Hamilton Gardens. The friends of the show, the New Zealand Tree Crops Association, are having the yearly sale. They've got all sorts of trees and plants and shrubs and things like that. And a few local people are going up there to sell things as well. So that's Hamilton Gardens, the Camellia Car Park, from 9 to 1 this Saturday. Also, the Whangarei Talent Factory, and I believe there's eight bands, is that right, Aaron? Eight bands are going to be playing, and that's going to be at 6 o'clock right here in the Town Hall, Bow Street, Raglan, and what did you say? That's what I said, wasn't it? 8th of July? 8th of July, there's some confusion there. 8th of July, that's when it is, and there's going to be Sausage Sizzle, Koha sort of gig, and come and watch eight different bands play, which is exciting. And all ages gig, that one. And also want to say, up at the Community House, just up the road here on Bow Street, they're having their Koha Kai thing today from 12 to 2. So if you're in town and you're peckish, go up there. I was just popped in briefly before, and there's like a pork, potato, and leek soup, and also a pumpkin sort of soup, and rawena bread, and also like a banana pudding kind of thing with custard. So it all looks pretty good up there. And if you're listening up there, folks at the Community House, here goes the Villains with This Valentine. We'll be back after this, probably with our guest, Brent Kloss from New Zealand Pork.
Rio to Cairo, London to Oslo. Your letters have shown up from so many places. Gee, I don't know why you still roam. You can't pick a friend out of 2 billion faces. And she's the one to turn your table. Straight road, they don't pick a heart so hard a jackhammer wouldn't break it. All their days flow smooth, but God knows why you choose your lovers on the opposite basis. The ground beneath you is so unstable, and all your ballrooms like Juliet's tomb, and your margaritas get mixed with hellfire. This valley. In the deep snow, when you're so cold, you crawl back to the one place where the rats haven't been yet. Letter from Oslo, still in the Cape snow. I know how I wish you were warm, dry, and back here. You say she needs more persuasion. No, 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 castles in the air. Hide your despair, each time your happiness sinks in the fire. Valentine's not inclined. No God above is gonna take you up. Makes you wanna climb right inside. Oblivion, 'cause she's
right, folks, that was the Verlaines there with this Valentine. Hope you enjoyed it. Now we are joined on the phone from Christchurch by the Chief Executive of New Zealand Pork, Brent Kleiss. How are you going, Brent? You there, Brent?
Yes, I am.
There we are. Excellent. We are on air. And how are you going, Brent?
I'm great, thanks, Craig. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. And what's been happening so far today?
Today, I'm about to go meet with farmers, actually. So we've just been preparing for that and make sure we've got all our staff available. We're going to go talk with them in Ashburton. All the South Island pig farmers have an annual district meeting. So we're going to go chat with them about what's happening in the world and what we want to happen over the next year or few years. And it's always good to go talk with them because it gives you that reinvigoration of your purpose and gives you the energy you need to go out and do the work that they want you to do. So that's good.
Yeah. And how many would there, pig farms would there be approximately in the South Island?
Oh, it's somewhere in the 50 range, I'd say. We've got about 80 commercial pig farmers nationally.
Right.
Which is probably a lot less than people sort of expect when you think of a primary industry in New Zealand.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
They produce around about 630,000 pigs a year.
Okay.
That create your ham and your bacon and your fresh pork in your supermarkets. And, you know, that's a pretty high output for a small group of people. So they're very valuable.
Yeah. Must be quite industrious, folks.
Certainly. And they're survivors too. You know, they're in the industry because they love their animals and they love what they do. And they've become very, very good at what they do. And as we'll talk about, I'm sure, today, the struggle for them at the moment is just competing with other products that come in from overseas and undercut them without meeting the same standards and quality that they get to. So that's, they're survivors in that sense. They're still around because they managed to do all these things and still create a product and make some money from it as well. They're very, very good at what they do.
Yeah, yeah, no, that'd have to be. But yeah, we will get into all that. But I guess firstly, tell us a bit about yourself, Brent. How long you been there? Because I do remember it was a year or two ago. It was your predecessor was on the show, and yeah, we had a good chat about the pork industry back then. So, what's your interest in getting involved with New Zealand pork and things like that, Brent?
Oh, I'll try keep it short. I've got a biosecurity background. I came through NPI. As a quarantine officer, you know, we're doing border patrol work. Everyone would have seen the TV series with the dogs. And that's my early background. Progressed into a bunch of assurance work from there, looking at how we can improve systems and making sure that the airports and the cargo inspectorates were doing what they were designed to be doing. And, of course, COVID came along about, you know, in 2020 there and 2021 and sort of put a big halt on a lot of the international passenger and travel stuff. So the option went up within NPI for staff to be redistributed and try something new and getting out of that assurance program work and trying and putting my hand up in public affairs and stakeholder and engagement liaison type roles across the ministry and its stakeholders was where I went and learnt a lot about a lot of different sectors, you know, through horticulture and agricultural livestock and research institutes and all the different people that have an interest in the primary sector in New Zealand. And one of the main ones that I was tasked with interacting with was NZ Pork. Got to visit some pig farms, which I would not have normally got to do, and it really gave me some insight into just how advanced technologically, how passionate they are, how good they are at what they do, how some of the perceptions out there around pig farming were just plain wrong, and made me feel really confident when a role came up to NZ Pork that I could go there and you know, contribute and do something. So initially came over as a policy manager, and then when David left at the start of last year, I was lucky enough that the board's put some faith in me to give the chief executive role a go.
Right on.
So I've been here about a year now and learned a lot and continue to do so.
No, congratulations. Yes. Yeah, the pig farming industry, it's not a massive industry like you're talking about. And what is it, 60% of the pork consumed in Aotearoa is actually all imported, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And I think that's a surprising stat for a lot of people. Even even within the farming sector, sometimes I mention that stat to people and they're like, really? Wow, and do you guys export? No, we don't, not really. We do a little bit to the island and Singapore, but the fact of the matter is we have such high standards of welfare. We have all the environmental compliance that every other agricultural sector in New Zealand has. We have obviously some requirements around staffing and making sure people are well cared for with, in terms of pay and equity and leave and all that sort of thing. And you know, we take real pride in all of that, but what it does do is lump extra cost on our farmers compared to what might be on the shelf alongside their products in the deli aisle with ham and bacon coming from countries that just simply don't meet those same standards. So, yes, 60% of it is supplied from those imports, and it can be really hard when you're in the supermarket to identify where your pork's coming from. So we make a big deal about trying to educate and inform people about how they can really make an informed choice on where they buy their ham and bacon.
Mm. And speaking of labelling, there has been some changes, hasn't there, on the labelling of pork products, is that right?
Yeah, so over the last 2 years, it's come in a couple of parts, but the last part came in May this year. Essentially now, it is a requirement on pork products and ham and bacon included to provide country of origin labelling. That's good. It's progress from where we were at, where you could just say made in New Zealand from local and imported ingredients and not say whether it was the brine or the pork itself and the ham that was imported.
Yeah.
You are required to say. However, where we had problems with it and where it's still less than ideal from our point of view is the fact you can now say made in New Zealand from pork raised in one of the following countries, and you'll see a list of about 13 countries in small print on the back. New Zealand may or may not be included within there. And as a consumer, when you go to the supermarket, you see your bacon aisle, you see, you know, a picture of New Zealand, you see made in New Zealand on the front, and it's only when you turn over the pack that you see this tiny little label with this level of detail saying it may have come from Spain, Poland, USA, Canada, and all these places that do things that we don't approve of in New Zealand. It can be quite frustrating for a New Zealand farmer to see a lot of that product going out the door at a cheaper price and still be trying to make a dollar.
Yeah, for sure. And it's only really since I became aware of it, and even some people now that I talk to just don't realise that, if you have a look at, you know, your bacon or ham or whatever, and exactly like you say, there's like a bunch of countries. And what was the old trick they were using? If they just put, like, water from New Zealand or something with it, they could say, you know, made in New Zealand kind of thing, wasn't it? Something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah. So the brine or the salts or things that they've used to cure the bacon or the ham were often locally sourced, but the pork itself coming from overseas, and that's still the case. It's a little bit more obvious, but not so much. So we've been lobbying the government to relook at those regulations, and ideally, you know, the specific country of origin or perhaps a percentage of New Zealand ingredients or something a bit clearer that makes it easier for a customer to make an informed decision would be something we'd like to see. Mm. And, you know, it might be that a shopper is happy, actually, with the conditions that they know their animals are raised in the likes of Australia, but not the US. So what we're asking for isn't a distinction between New Zealand products alone, but a specific labelling of where the animal within that product came from so that they can make the decision themselves.
Yeah, because, yeah, like you said, I mentioned sort of briefly earlier that the animal welfare standards for the pork industry in New Zealand is way, way higher than most countries from around the world. Would you argue it's maybe the toughest in the world?
Yeah, we think so. We know the rest of the world's trying to catch up, but at the moment we're definitely still ahead, and we're planning to go further. We've put our own industry positions back to the government around the pig's code of welfare in New Zealand, and we want to see improvements in the way that we farm as well. It's going to be very hard for farmers to do that, whether the government accepts our industry proposals or goes even further without some sort of support. And the number one thing we could think of in terms of support would be a requirement for imported product to meet the same standards as our own. But unfortunately, we did a petition earlier this year that got presented to the Primary Production Select Committee, and ultimately it failed in that sense that they decided not to progress further. So that's very frustrating.
Mm.
We're told a lot by government that this is what people want, increased welfare, increased environment, but when it comes to supporting those types of principles themselves where they have the ability to, it doesn't seem to go too far, which is pretty frustrating.
No doubt. And, I know in the organic sector, right, there's to export to, I don't know, a place like America or the EU, whatever, you've got to meet their standards. And I'm just kind of surprised that it's not that way coming, people exporting to New Zealand in the pork industry. It just doesn't kind of line up.
Yeah, and, a lot of, we understand there's complexity around that with international trade obligations.
Mm.
And that sort of thing. But we think that the vast majority of New Zealanders would support the requirement for standards like this to be required of imports as well as local product. And therefore, in terms of trade barriers and arguments around free trade and that sort of thing, we think we're on a pretty good footing in that sense. But, ultimately, it's the government that can make that call, and all we can do is try and broadcast our opinion on it and hope that plenty of people agree and put the pressure on with us.
Yeah. And good luck with that. Yeah, because it just doesn't kind of add up to me, like I say. But there was so you proposed a draft sort of code of welfare, and the government rejected that. And are they still actually working on something, or has that kind of been shelved for now? Are you aware?
Yes, a formal consultation was last year, and they came NAWAC, the National Animal Welfare Advisory Committee, who is the body that oversees proposed code changes to welfare. Put forward some pretty outlandish, we felt, suggestions around, things that would require farms to over double some of their space within their buildings and complete removal of systems that protect piglets from being squashed and things like that. So we put our own counter proposal, and we definitely accept that there is room for us to move. We want to see a reduction in the amount of time that those farrowing systems are used for. We want to see an increase in space, but maybe just not to the level that NAWAC suggested. Our industry positions, we spend a huge amount of time and money on ensuring that we aligned them with the best available animal welfare science out there.
Mm.
We then floated that with farmers and industry to see, what's practical? What will actually work, and how do we combine those two things? And we got probably the most united industry that we've seen for a long time on what we submitted with our industry proposition.
Mm.
And we think that it's well-based and evident. So we're hoping that through this consultation period and through what has been some post-consultation engagement between MPI and us around the economics and the impacts of that as well, that the government will see some sense and see that the industry's come up with a really, really good proposal here and listen. So we're at the moment awaiting a decision essentially from the minister on where they're going to go with it, and I imagine they're working on some pretty tight timeframes with the election coming up.
Yes, yeah, no doubt. And I suppose that's difficulty when you're trying to deal with government around either side of the election, really. It's just going to take, everything will slow down, or mostly probably more likely than speed up, wouldn't it?
Well, I guess it depends how they think their decision will be received.
True, yeah.
I'm sure that those kinds of conversations going on as well. And it's deeply frustrating for farmers, and even yesterday, and I'm sure today, when I talk with them, and I ask the question, do you want a fast decision and the uncertainty to go, or do you want the right decision? And there's a balancing act to get there, because the longer it hangs around with all that uncertainty, the less decisions that farmers can make on farm around their buildings and their investments, and the greater the costs and the uncertainty can grow. But at the same time, what they would most want, I think, is the right decision to come through, something that makes sense in terms of the animal welfare outcomes and something that makes sense in terms of practicality. So that's what we're hoping for, whoever ends up making the decision, whether it's the current government or any potential new one.
I was just sort of thinking to myself there that, the carbon footprint of importing all that pork, if we want to get onto carbon, would be like, huge, right? You know, all that coming in. And would I see somewhere is only the pork industry accounts for only 0.2% of the agricultural emissions, is that right?
Yeah, the New Zealand pork industry sits around that 0.2%. We've got a bit of an advantage, you know. They're not, the gastrointestinal tract is very different to cattle and other animals. They're monogastric, so they don't produce the methane in the same way. The biggest emitter for pigs is effluent, but of course with about half of our industry being indoors, you can capture that quite easily. Mm. In ponds and put a cover over it, capture the gas and do something with it if you have the motivation and the funding to invest that way. So we certainly see pig farming as having a really big part to play in the ability to produce protein and nutritious food for New Zealanders at a very low carbon footprint impact. I guess the work hasn't really looked and focused on the pig industry so much because of the huge benefits that could be gained from making gains in beef and dairy, but certainly we see our part to play in there for a long time to come. We just hope that we're supported to exist still to be able to do that.
Mm, yeah. And what percentage, I wonder if you know, kind of roughly anyway, would be like grass-fed or standing crop-fed, the pig feed?
So, it's a bit of a mix. Most pig farmers will feed grain. They're grain fed, you know.
Right.
There's a lot of imported grain, so there is a carbon footprint impact there.
Mm.
But there are farms as well that grow their own, and in fact, some of our most efficient and more, both in terms of, you know, saving costs, but also in terms of actually having good results for growth for their animals, are those that produce their own feed. Or source it locally.
Mm.
And there's a bit of a circular benefit there where you can use the effluent from the pigs to aid with local growth and horticulture without needing to import your fertilisers from Morocco or wherever they come from around the world. So, there's some really good benefits to pigs that I think are underappreciated. And when this whole conversation around regenerative farming, whatever your definition of that is, we think there's room there for pigs to be part of a diverse sort of farming landscape. I guess, you know, for anyone new trying to get into pig farming or considering pig farms, pigs on their farm as part of something like that, they'll run into the same difficulties that our current pig farmers have, which is why it's really important we get some support out of government for the types of things that we were discussing earlier around welfare and equal standards and that sort of thing.
For sure. I mean, the circular economy thing is becoming increasingly more important, like you just alluded to there. You just keep hearing about it more and more, and it's interesting, that one. Like you say, I mean, pigs are pretty flexible kind of animals, I'd imagine, right? They could slide into a lot of existing farming systems already, with the payoff being the something delicious to eat, and plus all the effluent going on to other crops or whatever. Yeah,
and I think that shows best when we looked at the numbers of pig owners around the country. We know we've got about 80 commercial-sized operations, but there's actually about 4,500-odd properties around the country that have pigs on them, according to the data. So they're out there. They're not necessarily all part of the food production system in the sense that, you know, people would typically understand. They might be raising them on farm for themselves, their family, their staff, or their local marae or church or that sort of thing. But people fit it in that way. And of course, pigs eat not just grain and what you grow on farm. There's plenty of people that use pigs as a option for getting food waste out of their own business costs. You know, pigs take a lot of byproducts out of the dairy sector as well for their feed. So there's other linkages there where they can help out.
Yeah, right on. And I'm just looking at a beautiful looking page too, the supportnewzealandpigfarmers.co.nz. And how long has this page been up and running, Brent?
Well, we launched that as part of our campaign around the consultation on the Pig Welfare Code. And it's designed to inform people who are interested about, well, what exactly is the difference between New Zealand pig farms and what goes on overseas, and why would it be a good thing to look at what the pig industry here does in New Zealand and support them by buying New Zealand product, or even getting on board with things like petitions that we might be running, or in this case specifically it was about making a submission for the welfare code consultation. So that website we're going to continue running, and it will over time change into something else, where the idea is, you know, I'd love to have a list on there of all the shops around the country and all the brands that do supply and manufacture goods that are using 100% New Zealand pork.
Mm.
So that people have an easy place to find, well, how can I actually do this for real? How can I support New Zealand pig farmers and stop getting stuff that might be subject to conditions I'm not happy with overseas? So we'll continue to have that website, and I urge anyone that's interested in what's going on to get on there and have a read.
Yeah, so that's it, folks. So support New Zealand pig farmers, all one word, .co.nz. Yeah, yeah. The only bacon I can seem to find, this is just bacon, in supermarkets, there's only one kind of brand of bacon that's actually, you know, 100% New Zealand pork that I usually see in the shops. Would that sound about right?
Yeah, your local butchers will certainly have New Zealand options typically. The supermarkets have them too. When it comes to your fresh pork product, you're almost certain that you'll be getting a New Zealand product.
Mm-hmm.
In supermarkets, it's hard to source fresh from overseas, so we're quite happy with that.
Right.
But certainly, yeah, bacon and ham, a much harder proposition. The best thing people can do is look out for the 100% New Zealand stickers on it. It's a big green round sticker. Or 100% ham or bacon, those are blue and black. They're just a circle sticker with 100% New Zealand on them. Mm-hmm. Or as well, we have our pig care welfare assurance program that we run across 90% of our farms, that ensures that farmers are up to scratch in terms of standards, and that they get an annual audit and that sort of thing from experts.
Mm-hmm.
So you can look out for that pig care sticker as well on your product in supermarkets. And manufacturers will try and put those labels on their brand where they feel it aligns with what they're doing. So you can do that, or yeah, you can start trying to read the fine print on the back, but sometimes it's hard to decipher what exactly they're telling you.
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, that, yeah, it's purposely sort of seems to be blurred, should we say? But, all right, so but you've got to get Dash Burton, so I better let you go shortly. So the support New Zealand pigfarmers.co.nz, they can jump on and have a look at there, some of the stuff we've been talking about and more probably. And how else can would you suggest the listeners do, Brent, as far as to support our good farmers here and pig farmers in Aotearoa?
Yeah, we've got our annual New Zealand Ham and Bacon Awards coming up as well next month. So there'll be some winners there that we announce around some of the best ham and bacon producers in the country that use New Zealand ham and bacon. So you'll be able to keep an eye out for those winner stickers too if you're looking for something, you know, really top of the range. And some of the butcheries that enter that are doing a really good service to New Zealand farmers. So if you can't find it in your supermarkets, you know, make that a little extra trip and go to your local butcher, support your local butcher. They create things and do products that you won't get at your big chains. They do some pretty amazing things with really quality products. So go out and support your local butcher.
Right on. And apart from the support, NewZealandPigFarmers.co.nz, there's New Zealand Pork website as well. You can jump on there and have a look at all things pork on there as well. Any other things people should be aware of, Brent?
No, I think just we're in a funny old place in the economy right now, and people are worried about spending their money in the right place. And this is somewhere that if you are going to spend an extra dollar, you can be sure that when you buy New Zealand ham or bacon that you're doing something good.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thanks very much for coming on the show, Brent. Oh, you're a busy man, and I really appreciate you joining us here. And, I'll get the podcast up and send it through to you guys in a couple of hours after the show's finished and things like that. So, but, yeah, thanks again, and have fun down Ashburton this afternoon.
Thanks, Craig. And if you do a sign-off on your podcast there, maybe you can mention that on that New Zealand pork website, we've got plenty of recipes too that people can use, so that if they go home with a nice piece of pork, they can do something satisfying and delicious with it.
All right, I'll write that down. Oh, this can be it right here. There you go. This will be the sign off. Yeah, New Zealand pork recipes. There we are on the New Zealand pork website. Excellent.
Perfect.
Thanks very much, Brent. All right. Anything else you want to add, or
No, all good. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Craig.
Yeah, hey, thanks very much again for joining the show. Appreciate it. Yeah, have a good one. Thanks, Brent. All right, folks, that was Brent Kleiss, the Chief Executive of New Zealand Pork. We have to go catch up with some farmers down Ashburton Ways. Interesting chatting, isn't it? Yes, and they're facing a few little problems at the moment, the pork industry, but like I said, they're passionate people, so I'm sure they'll figure it out. All right, I'll probably come back some headlines after this one. I'm going to play this one, I think. Subterranean Homesick Alien by Radiohead. up 3 AM, Homesick Alien there by Radiohead, and it's time for some Primary Sector headlines here on the Over the Fence show. Now, we'll do a couple anyways, and scientists at University of Canterbury are developing a tool which will allow farmers to measure phosphates in their local waterways. Phosphate, which is a key ingredient in some fertilisers, can hit the streams and rivers when runoff from farms ends up in them. This can cause damaging algae blooms, which have flow-on effects for fish and other wildlife. Associate Professor of Physical and Chemical Sciences, Deborah Crittenden, said at the moment it was hard to detect phosphate in waterways as it was colourless and odourless. She adds, currently there isn't a simple chemical-free way of monitoring phosphate levels, but we've already developed some very sophisticated ways of sensing phosphates in our bodies. So we're going to learn from nature to develop a novel light-sensitive biosensors. So great, great innovation there from the University of Canterbury. Phosphate, yeah, it is a problem for sure. And strawberry lovers and growers may struggle to get their hands on new plant supplies this year. Yes, indeed. Adverse weather in the Bay of Plenty this year has slashed a third of the country's strawberry plant supplies, right as the season kicks off next month. Last year, 13.5 million plants were sold domestically, compared to this year when there was only estimated going to be 9 million available to both commercial and home garden markets. Berry Fruit Propagators Chairman Peter McIntyre said it's been a hard time for the main Kati Kati propagator. He says, unfortunately, the biggest grower has suffered the biggest loss and consequently the highest number of plants. Yeah, we had so much rain in the spring and some of the growers were unable to keep up with the weeding and it just got on top of them. They weren't able to get enough staff to manage the problem. So, yes, hopefully some local growers around here in Whanganui that have got some strawberry plants to hand. And ease up and take one step at a time is one piece of advice for farmers and growers suffering after the calamitous weather this year. People struggling with their mental health often try to work harder, hoping this will relieve the pressure, says Rural Support Taranaki Chair Mike Green. You're better off slowing down, he adds. Very good advice there from Rural Support. Yes, because there is, luckily, not so much here in the Waikato, but around other parts of the country, there has been some pretty damaging weather around the place. And I'll finish with this one. Several New Zealand sawmills producing housing timber are temporarily halting production as the construction sector slows. Forest manager and log marketer Alan Laurie said demand for building new houses has dropped in the face of rising interest rates. As a result, there was too much timber on the market. Prices were dropping and sawmills were even off production, Laurie said. He adds, there are many sawmills running short, and I hear there are a couple in the North Island literally stopping. Some of the larger mills, he adds. It's not a happy hunting ground at the moment, he adds. So, yeah, kind of disheartening to hear that, to be honest. Yeah, okay, the interest rates are high, but, you know, you'd think with a housing shortage and things like that, maybe, I don't know, the government or someone could step in and, you know, pick up the slack and help out both people needing houses and the timber industry. And that's going to do it, I feel like, for the Primary Sector headlines. I'm going to play this one now by the Mutton Birds called A White Valiant, and we'll come back some weather after this one. Smell the clay.
this way. Let's turn off for a minute. I've seen something. Let's take a look now. But hold on tight. This stretch has needed fixing for years. Over there, I knew it. You read these roads like a book now. If you drive them every day, in the last half hour, a lot of cars have been through here, and you can still see the moon, though it's the middle of the morning. You can smell the clay. I said, you can count yourself lucky. Not many people know this way. Here we are on that hill over there.
White Valiant there by the Mutton Birds, one of my favourite ones of their ones. And with the time here on the Over the Fence show, and a southwesterly airflow lies over New Zealand today, with a large low ascended to the east of the North Island. So there's going to be showers out here. Look, we've already had today here in beautiful Whangaroa, and eastern regions now looking drier than anticipated a day ago, which is probably good for them because they've had a good dump over Coromandel and Tairawhiti, place like that. So going to be rain or showers for the lower South Island as well. And looks like, yeah, Southland's going to get pretty wet, and up along the west coast, down south also. And so around our part of the country, it's going to be partly cloudy with occasional showers, which is kind of what you see is what you get out there already so far. Bay of Plenty is going to stay kind of dry, which is good. We just heard the strawberries are getting hammered and cutty cutty over there. And Auckland Northland may see the odd isolated heavy shower with a thunder in the afternoon. And the southwesterly is going to freshen up after midday. So there's a brief kind of headline thing for you. And what can we expect coming up around here? Well, 16 degrees is going to be the high today. 15 will be the high tomorrow. And then somewhere between 13 and 14 for the rest of the week. Nighttime high of 11 today. Then sort of between 8 and 10 degrees. Nighttime highs for the rest of the week as well. So, yeah, sort of clear, sunny kind of patches today with showers. Pretty much the same tomorrow. Maybe some thunderstorms and a bit more rain Friday. How many mils are we looking at there? 14 mils they're expecting kind of Friday. 11 mils they're guessing tomorrow. Saturday and pretty much the rest of the week is going to be sort of showery and sunny. So, yeah, pretty kind of settled in that what we're getting kind of now, really, just varying amounts of rain, I guess, and sunny breaks. And southwesterly wind today, blowing at about 24 k's. West southwesterly tomorrow and the next day. Then a westerly Saturday, back to a west southwester Sunday. Then a southwest into early next week. Not super strong winds, around about sort of the high 30 k's an hour kind of range. So there's kind of, and yeah, as we look towards sort of Tuesday and Wednesday next week and Thursday, well, it looks at this stage anyway, there's going to be probably, yeah, cloudy, but no more rain. So yeah, it'll come and go a bit, but yeah, it's not too cold, and it's not super wet yet in most places, but although it is getting kind of wet around a little bit. And what else can I bring you? The sun rose at 7:38 this morning, will set at 5:11 this evening. The length of visible light is 10 hours and 32 minutes. The actual day length is 9 hours and 33 minutes. And tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen, will be 20 seconds longer than it is today, because, of course, the solstice was, winter solstice was just last Thursday, I think it was. And the beautiful moon, I've seen it the last few nights, sort of, kind of hanging half up in the sky, 67%, they say, illuminated. It's a waxing gibbous at the moment. That will rise at 5 past 1 this afternoon, so pretty soon. It will set at 1:34 in the morning, and we're coming up to the full moon on July the 3rd. So there's a little bit of weather there, and now I'm going to play for you the Flaming Lips with a song called Race for the Prize. All right, that's the Flaming Lips there with Race for the Prize. Hope you enjoyed that one, and that's kind of it for the show for today. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks again to Brent Cleese from New Zealand Bulk coming on to have a chat to the show, and do take care of each other out there, folks, and yeah, look after yourselves, and yeah, take a minute when it is sunny just to sit down and take in some rays if you can. Do it at all. It's important just to yeah, look after yourselves and those around you, especially now we're in the winter, getting a bit colder and wetter and things like that. So, yep, take care, and I'll probably be back next week. Ka kite, folks. Have a good one. I'm going to go with this one, The Great Unwashed with Neck of the Woods.